Okay, terrific.
Hello, everybody. It's Marilyn Harris here of Hard at Work and You're Creating a Impactful Legacy. Welcome back to the show. I have a very special guest with me. His name's Jason. And we actually met on Facebook in a group, and he does elder law, which I find very curious. So I'm going to be very interested in hearing the conversation. So, Jason, welcome to the show. And can you please tell me or the audience basically how did you get started in doing elder needs law?
Yeah, yeah. By the way, thank you, Marilyn. Thank you so much for having me on the show. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit before. I'm just as interested in learning more about what you do. And thank you for being interested in what I do.
Yeah.
Because I think you and I both may have the same problem, which is that not everyone knows what it is exactly that we do.
Right.
And so I spend a lot of my time, as I'm sure you do, trying to educate the general public, which is why I love coming on shows like this, because I do a few different things. So I think I should start by saying I'm an elder law attorney, but that means that's more than one thing, really.
Right.
Elder law is an umbrella term for multiple different areas of law. So elder law really is comprised of... there's some areas that people no doubt have heard of, right? There's estate planning, which is the wills and the trusts and the powers of attorney, who get your stuff after you pass away, who can make decisions for you if you become incapacitated. There's probate, where for people who have not planned, done proper planning, the probate is a court process where you get a judge involved to determine who gets your stuff. That can be avoided. There's guardianship, right? If you don't have a good power of attorney and you can't make decisions for yourself, you're still going back to court. That can be avoided as well. But for some people, it's unavoidable.
Right.
And then what I really spend most of my time doing is something called Medicaid planning. And that's the mystery. That's the one that there's lots of misconceptions. That's the one that people don't exactly know what that means. And Medicaid planning is essentially, I can legally and ethically protect my client's assets and get the government to pay for some or all of their long-term care, whether it's care at home, in an assisted living facility, or in a nursing home. As you know, those things can be quite expensive.
Yeah, they are.
So I know that was kind of long-winded, but that's what I do as an elder law attorney, and I do it throughout the state of Florida.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I love the selection of services you offer because, you know, as I talk to people, most people don't even have a clue that, you know, health directives, what are that, you know,
and the worst is, or they download something for free off the internet. And what happens is that stuff that's on the internet, it's not all bad.
Yeah.
But it's not comprehensive enough. So for, so people are like kind of mulling along throughout their day, thinking they have this good plan in place. They download like a power of attorney is a prime example. And it might be fine for things like banking and dealing with real estate.
Yeah.
But then when it comes time to asset protection, it's essentially what Medicaid planning is. I call it asset protection for the middle class, right? That's kind of how I think is a good nutshell description of it.
Okay.
Most powers of attorney that are downloaded off the web or even done by other attorneys who don't know about what I do, they're not specific enough. And so my client, if they come to me and they don't have capacity, I can't help their family rearrange their assets. We may be back into that guardianship court setting, which we will avoid if possible.
Yeah. No, I think it's kind of interesting because when I got started doing what I was doing and then learning more what I can do and what I can't do. And of course, every state has their own laws. So you have to know that. But when things get complicated, I always refer them to the lawyer because obviously they know what they're doing. They went to school, they learned what they're doing, right? So, you know, but there are some things I can help lawyers do that they don't want to do. And from that, then it becomes, you know, an assistant for you guys, right? And then that's basically. So tell me a little bit. Did you have a family that had an elder problem, or how did you decide to pick elder?
You know, so that's a good. So I didn't start out as an elder law attorney. I really stumbled into an elder law case, and what, you know, as attorneys, well, I don't think everyone does this, but you really need to know what you don't know.
Right.
And, you know, we try to be specialists, meaning, you know, people, I have friends and family, and they may ask me a question about criminal law or bankruptcy law. And I'll go, you know, guys, I go, I took like one law school class on that stuff. I am not an expert in those things. I focus on elder law now. That's what I'm an expert in, right? That's what I know a lot about. So I got this case and I wasn't sure how to handle it. And I referred it to a experienced elder law attorney. And I said, let me follow along. I go, let me, because this is kind of interesting. I had not been exposed to it too much before, the Medicaid planning side of things. Right. And I said, this is super interesting because A, there's not a lot of attorneys who do elder law.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, here I'm located in South Florida. We serve the entire state, but we have of course, a famously large elderly population. I said, this seems like an underserved area in law because I knew of one attorney who did it. So this guy who is kind of a legend in our state and has, you know, done this, you know, a million times before, said, no problem. Let me show you kind of what it is that I'm doing. And I became so fascinated with it. Mm-hmm. And afterwards I said, all right, how do I learn more? What books do I need to read? What conferences do I have to attend? It became a mentor of mine.
Right.
And then after, you know, a couple of years of doing that, I said, okay, I'm ready to launch my own law firm. And Elder Needs Law was born.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. So were you doing another kind of law before you started or?
I was doing personal injury, which I still have partners who do that work under the umbrella of a different law firm, but I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it. And so I maintain my relationship with that firm because I know they're good attorneys and they're really good at what they do. And so I can know that I'm handing people over to attorneys, but I didn't have a passion for it.
Yeah.
I love elder law. I love doing the estate planning and the Medicaid planning. And I have other attorneys who work with me who do also do probate and estate planning. And, you know, so we work together. We were really, I'm very proud of the team that we put together to serve those who need elder law services.
Yeah. Awesome. So can you tell me maybe share a story with the audience of maybe of a case that you handled and what happened out of it? You know, it's always the stories that share what people get, what we do.
absolutely. So first I want to tell you a story. Before I tell you about a success, I want to tell you about someone who would call me too late because it was, I think it highlights the lack of information that's out there.
Yeah.
And it truly was sad. And I wound up helping this person pro bono, but so essentially, I was speaking to the sister of a woman who needed to be in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And the sister called me and the sister who was in a nursing home didn't have capacity, but the one who called me had a power of attorney. And so that was a good first start. And the power of attorney was good enough for us to be able to do whatever we needed to do. We came down to it and I said, well, how much money does your sister have? And she says she's down to her last $5,000. And she's telling me how she had a house.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, well, I know Medicaid doesn't let you have a house. So we wind up selling it. And then we've used all those proceeds to pay for the nursing home.
Right.
And now we're down to the last $5,000. And someone said, I ought to call an elder law attorney.
Right.
That's why I'm calling you. And I said, well, I'm so sorry to hear that because in fact, in Florida, you are allowed to have a house, meaning you're supposed to only have $2,000 to your name, but there are certain assets that are not counted as assets. Meaning you can have your $2,000 plus some of these assets. And one of them is your homestead, your primary residence.
Yeah.
And the look on her face was like I broke her heart unintentionally, you know? And she's like, you mean we could have kept the house because we love that house and we could have, you know, and you know, I wanted to live in that house. And it was very, I said, I wish you had called me a year ago or to whenever before you sold the house, because I would have told you that we didn't have to do that. Because what I do is I have all, and even if you had extra money too, I have legal and ethical ways of protecting that that, right, that money, and still get you qualified for Medicaid.
Right.
So that was like, I thought that was like just so indicative of, you know, people don't really know. And there is so much bad information, and people, right, ask their neighbors, and everyone thinks Medicaid's going to take the house. And in some states that's true, mm-hmm, but in Florida, it's not.
Yeah.
In Florida, it's not.
Yeah.
So that was an example of, you know, I wish that, I wish that they
long. Wait, yeah, it's called, exactly, waiting too long.
Yeah. You know, time, you know, with these sorts of things, time's never on your side,
yeah,
right? I mean, the sooner you plan, you know, I can help people who don't necessarily need Medicaid now, but they know it's coming down the pipe, right? They may, right, have a history of Alzheimer's in their family or whatever the case might be. They're just getting up there in years. And some people understand that long-term care is the biggest threat to your assets.
Right.
For 99% of Americans, mm-hmm, and certainly Floridians. It's the cost of money, because people think that Medicare, right, what, right, everyone gets when they're 65,
yeah,
or mostly everyone, they think, yeah, that Medicare is going to cover them.
Yeah.
And that's the other where I have to be the bearer of that news. Medicare has a very limited long-term care benefit. They will pay, right, for, they'll pay for 100 days in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. They will not pay one red cent toward an assisted living facility.
Yeah.
And under very limited situations will they pay for home care, and usually for a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Medicaid doesn't have those restrictions. Medicare doesn't. People think, you know, I've got Medicare, I've got the Cadillac of Medicare, yeah, supplements, I'm going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not necessarily, yeah, going to be okay. So, so planning ahead is key, if nothing more, to get them a good estate plan so that if we have to maneuver assets down the line,
right,
we have the ability to do that.
Right, right. Can you, yeah, tell a little bit about is the difference between a power of attorney for the financial aspects, mm-hmm, and the power, mm-hmm, of attorney for somebody that is in the life?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great question. So, we have what I call the key incapacity planning documents, right? Who can help you make decisions in different circumstances, if you become unable to make these decisions for yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
And in my mind, there are three key documents that's important, mm-hmm, for everybody to have. The first is a financial power of attorney. This is the document that allows you to empower somebody else to help you do your banking, deal with your real estate, sign contracts, deal with the government,
mm-hmm,
deal with your retirement plans,
right,
really help you live your life, right? To someone who can help you take control. Now, that's very, very important, because like I was saying before, there are these free forms. All you can Google free power of attorney, you'll get something, and,
right,
it may be good for certain things, but, right, it won't be good for others.
Right.
And then you see these like very generic powers where they basically say, you know, I give my agent the ability to do everything for me, so help me God. It's a one pager, and that's, yeah, the end of it. You go, yeah, look how good that little power, those power of attorney, since they can do anything for me.
Yeah.
And again, I have to be the bearer of bad news and saying, well, in Florida, that's, mm-hmm, not allowed. You,
yeah,
if the power of attorney is not specific, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no general power of attorney. It's not in there in black and white. The agent can't do it. Not only that, there are certain powers that if they're not initialed properly, it can be there bolded in black and white and highlighted and circled, but if it's not initialed properly,
yeah,
they can't do it.
Right.
So that's really important. That's the first, in my mind, quite frankly, and I do a lot of complicated trusts and serious planning.
Mm-hmm.
The number one document that I provide to my clients is a well-drafted, durable power of attorney, because,
right,
that gives us the flexibility to do whatever we might need to do in the future.
Right.
That's the first document. The second document, in Florida, we call it a healthcare surrogate designation. Other states call it a healthcare power of attorney or,
right,
a healthcare proxy. In Florida, we call it a healthcare surrogate designation. This is who you want to empower,
right,
to help you make medical decisions and,
right,
access medical records and consent to treatment or withdraw, yeah, treatment or get prescriptions and things like that to help,
right,
you navigate the medical field. Also very important, something that a lot of people don't realize, and this is for the power of attorney as well, is just because you're someone's child doesn't automatically give you these powers. Just because you're someone's spouse doesn't automatically give you these powers. Now, in a healthcare situation, there is a statute in Florida, we call it a healthcare proxy statute, where if you don't have a health document, there is an order of people who can help you make these decisions. But you don't want to rely on that, because it, you know, all this stuff is geared towards avoiding delays, right? You don't want your doctor to have to talk to their lawyer to see who's empowered to make decisions for you in a healthcare setting. You want it to be in their file already in black and white.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So we got a durable power of attorney, we got healthcare surrogate, and then finally we have the living will.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with the last will. Last will is a probate tool, who gets your stuff after you pass away. A living will, on the other hand, is if you are at the end of your life, if you are in what they call an end stage or terminal condition, right? You're not communicative, you're hooked up to the machines, and everybody's of the opinion, your doctor, your healthcare surrogate is of the opinion that there's no reasonable likelihood of you coming out of that condition with any measurable quality of life, right? Like you can be alive, but not alive. You can be, you know,
keeping them comfortable, as they would say.
Living versus existing, right? At that point in time, what do you want to happen? Because if there's nothing in place, doctors are empowered to do whatever they need to do to save your life.
Right.
No matter how painful it might be, whether you know you, whether they save your life for five more minutes to only have you pass at that point in time.
Right.
Now, there's nothing inherently wrong with that, right? Some people take the position that I want my 5 minutes, right? Do whatever you need to do to save my life. I don't care how painful it is. I don't care how unlikely it is that I will survive it or be able to like awaken and, you know, live my life. Do what you need to do to save my life, because give me my 5 minutes, because maybe in minute three, someone runs in with the cure for whatever's ailing.
Right.
Sometimes it's for religious reasons. People had take that position as well. So again, there's no judgments. We'll do whatever people want, but I would say the vast majority of people don't want that. You know, and you're probably aware of this more than most, right? Doing CPR, cracking ribs, intubating. These can be very painful, life-saving measures that make sense for you and me.
Yeah.
It makes sense for people who can come out of it. But if you're 102 years old and you've been unconscious for 6 months, that's probably not going to do you any good and only cause you unnecessary pain. So most people say, if there's no reasonable likelihood of me coming out of this, don't keep me hooked up to machines. Keep me pain-free, keep me hydrated, and let me go. It's my time.
Right.
That's the power of a living will. Very, very important.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's kind of funny because when I started doing this, and the only reason, like, I'll share my story when I'm on your show. It's like I learned a lot by just doing something, getting his will done the day before he dies kind of thing. But I learned a lot, and I'm always still learning because I have to present the right information, right?
Right.
And every state, like you were saying, if Florida is quite different than California or something like that, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. So what do you suggest or recommend people get done first before they do anything else?
Yeah. If they're, you know, I tell people, if you are, if you have a significant other, if you have kids, I mean, everyone needs an estate plan. I mean, if you're over the age of 18, you should have an estate plan of some kind, even if it's just that power of attorney, right? Even we sometimes have, kids who are going off to college, if they're 18, if they're under than 18, they can't sign anything. But if they're 18 and they're in college, you know, sometimes college kids get injured. And mom's got to come running down and dealing with the doctors, and they can't do that so easily if there's no healthcare surrogate in place.
Right.
So even sometimes these very basic plans are important, even for very young people. But in my mind, estate plan becomes the most important if you have a significant other or if you have kids.
Yeah.
And certainly if you have any you know, if you own real estate and have a bank account,
right,
some level of estate planning is important. So we tell people typically you probably want to avoid going to probate court. If you can avoid it, it's best to avoid probate court. Probate court, again, not inherently evil, but it takes time.
Yeah.
It takes extra money that can be avoided, and your life is in the public record, and a lot of people want to avoid that as well.
Right.
So we have a revocable trust-based plan, and some people get skittish when I say trust. They go, "Oh, you know, trusts are for millionaires." And I go, No. It's if you own a house, you need a trust.
Right.
Because if you just have a house in your name and you pass away, it's going to probate court. That could be your own, that could be your only asset. It's going to probate court. Mm-hmm. Using a revocable trust is really for everybody, and people should not be so afraid of it, because there's no real detriment to it in terms of if you're in a state like Florida as homestead, your real estate maintains homestead benefits. The revocable trust isn't taxed any differently. Right. I mean, the biggest change to your life might be on the upper left-hand corner of your checkbook. It says your name as trustee of your trust instead of your name by itself. That's like the biggest, you know, but you will live your life exactly how you're living it now. You'll just have your assets in a trust, or you'll set, for example, life insurance policies or 401k plans to pay into that trust upon your death. And by doing that, the trust, what happens is the trust lives even when you pass away. And the best way I can describe it is the trust is like an instruction manual where you get to change the instructions, and you can dictate what happens to your stuff if you pass away.
Right.
And you can change those rules. You can change the rules of the game at any point in time while you have your mind. But then when you pass away, it's etched in stone. Your revocable becomes irrevocable. And now whoever you've decided to be your trustee after you pass away has to follow the instructions that are in that trust. Here's who gets what. Do we sell the house or do we keep it for the kids? Right. Yeah. You know, what do we, who gets what? Right. What do you want going to charity? What do you want going to your kids? What do you want going to whoever it is you so choose? So it's a very valuable tool, saves people a lot of headaches and costs and waiting. And it's just something that more people should have.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about students away at school, like how many parents really consider that they should have some sort of paperwork to say, you know, if my child gets sick, you know, I'm going to be, you know, his spokesperson, if you will.
Right.
But if not, they don't do anything. And it's kind of amazing. Even by the time people retire, a lot of people don't even have anything done yet. I deal with it all the time.
Or they have documents that are so woefully inadequate. Old's not necessarily bad. It's when you have, because listen, I tell people really every 10 years, you probably want to update your estate plan, get a fresh set of documents because if a power of attorney is a good example. But in Florida, the law changed in 2011, where the requirements as to what makes a valid power of attorney, what language has to be in there. Now, if you never updated it, Florida says we will honor those old forms, right? Because it was valid when you signed it and we changed it on you. So we're still going to honor it. But what I tell people, the reason why you want to get it updated is because the bank teller doesn't know that, right? Yeah. So the bank, you want to say, these powers of attorney, these documents are only as good as the third parties who honor them, right? So you want to be able to go in and get stuff done. Yeah. You don't want things to get held up in legal because you're presenting this very old form. And they go, gosh, we haven't seen that in forever. This is not what we're used to seeing. You want them seeing something that's relatively fresh if you can. If not, we'll have to deal with it. And that's okay. We'll deal with it if we need to. But, you know, always, again, once every 10 years, always good to have a fresh set of eyes take a look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much to do under that umbrella of things to do, you know.
Correct.
So. Yeah. So what would you just say, recommend that get somebody that has a power attorney and a
A revocable living trust. Yeah.
And then just go from there and work with a lawyer such as yourself that can actually help them do that, right?
Right. And you want someone, you want a lawyer who does, who's either an elder law attorney or an estate planning attorney. Right. You don't want to go to the divorce lawyer who says, yeah, I can help you out with the will, because they're not keeping up. Just like I don't keep up. I don't follow any other area of law. Right. I have to refer that to a colleague. If someone says, I want to get divorced, I'm going to go, I am not your guy. Our firm doesn't do that. We have to refer to someone who knows what that's all about. I have an issue with the IRS. I don't know that either. Got another attorney for it, right? Whatever it is, you don't. And the unfortunate thing is there are plenty of attorneys who will, we call them door lawyers, because they'll do whatever walks through the door, right?
Yeah.
And that's a recipe for disaster. That's that you cannot possibly keep up with all these different areas of law. So you really want someone who focuses on solving your unique problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you have to have the professionals that know their stuff and know how to help you. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be mayhem. I call it a mess. You're going to leave a mess.
That's right.
So do you have any final words you'd like to share before we close off?
Yes, I'll say that this stuff is uncomfortable to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking, again, like your world also. Yeah. We're talking about what happens as we get older, what happens as we get sicker, what happens when we eventually pass away.
Right.
Burying your head in the sand has never been a solution to a problem.
Right.
And this is something that all you risk doing by not planning ahead is being more of a burden on your family who's going to have to deal with this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I want to encourage people, again, if it's not me, it's fine. Find an attorney. If you're in Florida, I hope you choose me. If not, if you have someone else that you know, you have a relationship with, go to that person. I'm fine with that. But go to someone, get it, bite the bullet, have the uncomfortable conversation and get this stuff taken care of, because it's important. You know, we all know there's only two things that are guaranteed in life, right? And we want to make sure that we're dealing with them. So with that, you know, planning's always going to be helpful. And the only thing I want to say is thank you very much for having me on your show. It really was.
Hey, you're welcome. I've learned so much from you already. It's just like, okay, but I thought I knew, I don't know.
Yeah. The only thing is, you know, on the Medicaid side is what we do is we give people access to resources they didn't realize they had access to. So I don't want people suffering in silence, right? I usually, with my client, I'm really dealing with their caregiver, right? Typically an adult child or spouse who is bearing the burden of maybe financial and emotional cost, and we can help with that stuff. So I hope people won't suffer in silence and go to an elder law attorney or a Medicaid planning attorney or an estate planning attorney, because it's all about making your life easier.
Right. And a lot of people just don't know who to go to, right?
Correct.
So the more people like yourself, Jason, that I know, and that I can redirect, you know, them to you, because, you know, it just supports me and it supports the client or the person that needs the help, you know, because some of them just don't know. Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you very much, Jason. I've so enjoyed our conversation. Like I said, I learned a lot already. So now I'm going, okay, got to go brush up those skills.
Thank you so much, Marilyn. I appreciate
it. So you're so welcome, and have yourself a wonderful day.
You too.
And let's just be kind to each other, because that's all we have. Okay.
Always a good plan.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.